Welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast from Future Plus, where smart businesses turn sustainability challenges into a competitive advantage. I'm Alex Smith, bringing you real stories from leaders who've transformed ESG pressures into opportunities for growth, innovation, and a stronger market position. So let's dive in. Bottled water is a $2 billion market in the UK alone, but it comes at enormous environmental cost. So how do you disrupt a category this big and profitably? Our guest today, Anthony Newman, CEO of Ape2O, believes his answer lies in a business model that eliminates single-use plastics without compromising convenience or commercial performance. In this episode, we're going to dig into the economics behind sustainability innovation, the operational realities of scaling refill systems, and the role businesses play in accelerating a low-waste future. Anthony, welcome.
Thank you very much, Alex. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to see you. Can you tell us, I was going to say a little about yourself, your background in Ape2O, but actually, can you tell us all about yourself, your background and Ape2O?
I've been in the business of drinks for about 25 years. Started in soft drinks in the 2000s, early noughties. And then I moved into running a beer brewery. My brother and I started a beer brewery in Australia. And so I've been in liquids for a long time. I'm a Cambridge grad. I probably should have gone and done banking or something. And it just never really appealed to me. So
Drink sounds way more exciting.
So, yeah, done things on something that's slightly past less traveled, sort of 10 years in the music industry, bit of advertising, then moving into drinks. And yeah, it's been a little bit past us traveled, and certainly to the chagrin of my parents in the early days, going, what are you doing? But anyway, so I suppose where this ties in and connects with Ape2O is I was in living in Australia. And it was up in Cairns in Queensland, beautiful part of the world. So the Great Barrier Reef meets the oldest rainforest on the planet. We were running a brewery, selling beer to the Aussies, my brother and I, which was quite an adventure and quite a lot of fun.
I feel also potentially an easy sell.
Yeah, there was certainly some upsides to it. So that sort of ran its course. I was there for 7 years and I was thinking about coming back to the UK, and I met this girl, lovely girl, who's now my wife, I'm pleased to say, and her first date was to take me to help build this turtle sanctuary out on one of the islands in the reef. And it was an amazing, great first date, but also really emotionally hit me. People say origin stories, but this is like a ton of bricks. We were helping create a sanctuary for, and I was the tall guy, so I was building the roof and stuff for this stuff on this island. But basically to help the turtles that had been damaged by marine plastics. So obviously fishing nets, you know, losing limbs and stuff is a horrible thing, but it's the more insidious thing of eating plastics and not being able to, and starving, and then also turning into floaters. Floaters are turtles which can't get down to their seagrass to eat. It's because they've got too much plastic in their bellies and it's changed their buoyancy. So that just hit me, and I realized I've been part of the problem. I'd been in the soft drinks industry selling plastic containers and soft drinks, and I realized, oh my goodness, it really just hit me. So I thought, I want to do something about that, you know, and the beer days were coming to an end, and I was like, okay, let's do something about this. And I started thinking about plastic, started thinking about what plastic gets into the sea. We've all seen the programs about plastic in the ocean, and plastic bottles is a big part of that. And I was like, and then I started thinking about plastic bottles. It's a new habit. I mean, I'm 53, right? And when I grew up, there was no plastic. There was no plastic bottles. I mean, Perrier came along around about then, and in glass bottles, but they just didn't exist. And now in the UK, I mean, you know the stats. I mean, you mentioned that £2 billion market. I mean, it's something like 6 to 8 billion bottles being bought in the UK every year, and about 7 million landing up in landfill every day. And it's such a mad idea, and it's also just a habit that's a bad habit that we've walked into. So I just thought I'm locked into it. I just couldn't get it out of my head. How do we stop plastic bottles getting in the oceans? Well, you stop people buying them in the first place. How do you stop people buying them in the first place? Come up with an idea. So that's the background.
I mean, that's an amazing story that you've just gone through. And I think there's nothing that encourages you and enthuses you to go after a subject than seeing the real devastation that can happen from it. But you are competing with really cheap single-use bottles, which, as you say, have very quickly become part of a grab-and-go lifestyle. How do you stay true to those sustainability goals? And what is it that Ape2O does that stops that process from happening?
Firstly, I'd say, and there's a couple of I saw a couple of things on Instagram the other day about where you drink water. The location where you drink it, it affects its price massively. So if you can buy, you can buy very, very cheap plastic bottled water in a supermarket. But if you're out and about on the go and you go to a convenience store, you're paying £1.50 to £2 for half a litre of water, which, by the way, is twice the price of petrol, which is mental if you think about that. And so you're basically paying for the receptacle that it comes in, the water comes in. But it's at different prices in different places. So our thought, our insight with Ape2O, so we're called Ape2O, obviously the pun of H2O, I'm sure you figured that out. We're basically like, let's go for the water on the go market, because that's where people are getting, one, getting ripped off. And secondly, sorry, that's a bit of a harsh word, but it's too expensive. It's a crazy amount of money to spend for water, drinking water.
And it's more expensive if you go for something that has a shiny label that says it does something extra.
There you go. There's the functional benefits that people try to add in. But essentially, I suppose that's another point. Talking about the benefits, what are people getting when they buy a plastic bottle? So I would say, number one, and we're talking about on the go. So that's the market we're after, the on the go market, where people are underserved at the moment. There are only choices out and about. If you don't have a refillable bottle, I'll have to probably buy a plastic bottle or go into a restaurant and ask them for a receptacle to drink something, whether using refill or whatever. And those are all good things. But the second bit is a good thing. But the what we thought was the benefits that people perceive are the convenience. Taste, obviously. I mean, at least so it doesn't taste bad. Something that it doesn't have to taste good. It just has a, you know, taste of nothing, really, is water. It's hygienic. It's pure. You trust the company providing it, that it's going to be pure. And it's, you know, hermetically sealed, all those good things. And also then there's the lifestyle stuff. You know, people buy into brands, but they buy into volcanoes and French mountains and all that sort of stuff. So that's what we had to address. And so what we do with Ape2O is we've provided the solution where we have these high quality vending machines, which we call Big Apes. We do deals with the landowners, who are our hosts for these Big Apes machines. And so we plug these high quality water machines into the water mains, into Thames water going through it. And then we intensely filter the machine, the water that goes through it to nano levels. We use ultraviolet light, which neutralizes any viruses and bacteria. And then it goes through a fridge unit, which chills and sparkles it. So we actually do CO2 into the machine, so we can do sparkling water or chilled still water on a street corner or in a whatever public domain place we are. And that is dispensed hygienically into people's bottles. They can't actually touch the water source. It's rifled straight into their bottle. And that's all done. There's no tanks. It's all done on demand as you press it. So the customer comes up and we have and pays 25p. Which is a contactless payment, so no coins or anything. And you've come up with your own bottle, so you've got to have your own bottle to use our machine. But that's what we're encouraging. We're encouraging refill and reuse to be the norm. And people are carrying a lot of bottles around these days. And I think, you know, we're leaning into that trend. But you come up and it's all over in 20 seconds. You choose your half a litre of chilled sparkling or chilled still or a litre, and off you go. And then we raise 10% of that revenue goes to ocean conservation projects and cleanups, which we care passionately about.
Amazing. And I can't even, the amount of times I have been thirsty and haven't been able to find something that isn't in single use plastic to drink, so have remained thirsty.
that shows you've got good willpower on that front. But
it's infuriating equally, you know. Yeah. Well, why is there no other options? And why have we not sort of innovated? You know, we have innovated, but you know, you guys have done it. But it there are so many opportunities for Ape2O to be in a variety of different situations. Yes. Yeah. I think is what I'm trying to get to, because yeah, it's the one thing you frequently need when you're out. And as you say, yeah, I mean, the cost is extraordinary.
Yeah. When you break it down like that, and people, when you think about that twice the price of petrol thing, you go, whoa, wow, we kind of sleptwalked into that.
Yeah.
And what can we do about it?
And are you finding as well that the landowners that you're working with and the partnerships that you have, is the demand from them about having more sustainable options for their sort of stakeholders, or is it around sort of tightening plastic regulations? What are you finding the driver on their side is?
A bit of both, but it started with wanting to be more sustainable. These are landowners that have realised they might have their own net zero ambitions, or certainly just a sustainability as a growing part of their remit of what they need to do. And they have a, and these are, by the way, landowners who have public realm components, you know, areas where the public interact, whether it's in a captive setting, like, or in a, you know, a moving through setting. But essentially, yeah, they need to be more sustainable. And the attraction to them of Ape2O is we're eminently measurable down to the last litre. And we report and provide that information to the landowners on a quarterly basis so that they know exactly where they stand. There's no greenwashing in sight. There's literally, you've got through this machine that's been on your land. And this is a metric they should own because it's on their land. Mm-hmm. And we're happy to share that. You know, this machine saved 10,000 bottles this year, or this quarter, or this month. And that actually represents a lot of crude oil and a lot of CO2 that was going to be used in the production of those bottles. So that's a metric they really appreciate. And it's a growing metric over time. Every customer we have, we've still have, and that's, and we love those relationships. So it's really important for them. The other part that's important now is the plastic regulation side. So there's a responsibility for landowners to pay for the waste pickup of plastic. And that is now more of a cost of a business for them. So we are, by definition, a plastic reducing initiative. So that's becoming more important as time goes on, and that's part of our sales pattern now.
I think there's a real education piece in just in the couple of sentences that you said there. It's not just the bottle. It's the logistics of the bottle, it's the manufacturing of the bottle,
100%.
It's the disposal of the plastic. There's an entire world that yep. exists around walking in, grabbing something out of a fridge and then disposing yep. of it. Yep. And I think that there's probably a little bit of an education piece for even for some, as you say, landowners or people that could have the potential of reducing what their carbon footprint looks like that maybe aren't looking at it in that wider view.
Yeah, and the price of that convenience to the consumer is now, I suppose the regulations on plastics is trying to give pass a bit of that price back to at least the landowners to understand actually there is a price to this convenience you're offering to the customer. But from a customer point of view, from the public, you know, we've got to be, you know, generous of the public. They want to be better. They want to do better. They want to be more sustainable. But, you know, the convenience will always trump it. So we therefore have to do, innovation has to come along and has to be, not shaming anyone. This is a really important point. Any innovation that is coming around to address this problem has to be about attracting people to the better solution. This is, we all want to live a better, more sustainable life and do our bit. But if you don't have the options in front of you, it's very hard to do that. And then when an option does come along and it's saying, hey, look, just give this a go. This is a really easy way for you not to buy a plastic bottle today. Yeah. And we can do that in all walks of life, not just in our narrow vein that we're looking at with plastic bottles. It could be, you know, household goods and wider beverage markets, all these sorts of areas. There's scope for innovation and there's some amazing companies doing good stuff in this space. So.
Yeah. Pushing people out of habits.
Yeah.
I think is a really important one. And what are you seeing, around the biggest risk for companies that aren't moving towards and are going to stick with traditional bottle, that aren't looking at that bigger picture? You see it, you know, I know you went through some of the sort of compliance stuff, but are you seeing the regulations increasing and sort of moving to who they're sitting with?
For companies, if thinking about companies rather than people that aren't making measurable shift, they're going to get a larger cost of doing business in the same single use way. But then there's, you know, within those companies, they're all populated and people work there and they have cultures, and there's an internal backlash about people wanting their companies to be better and trying to be better. And then there's the stakeholder stuff within those public and private sector organizations. We all got a sort of growing responsibility. It's just sometimes it's hard to figure out and you can't necessarily blame businesses or stakeholders all the time. You know, they sometimes need to be shown the way or shown how there's other alternatives there that they could choose. When I think about the challenges in front of us, you know, as a company trying to show the public a different way to engage with water on the go, we often think about government and we try to lobby government for banning plastic bottles, but that's not going to happen for years. Let's all be honest. There's too much money being made in that value chain. And then, you know, so there's regulations that's going to be take a while to catch up. That's just the sad truth. And businesses will do what they have to do when they are forced or need to, and some will be ahead of the game. I think consumers will always be the lead on this. We've got to empower consumers to want to demand this change. And unless they get shown the options and say, okay, that, I'm going to choose that with my wallet, we won't start to really get appreciable change.
Yeah, I'm always nervous of sharing things that I haven't fact-checked, but I saw a figure of how much had been put, had lobbied the amount of money that had been used to lobby the EU to not continue plastics regulation or not to strengthen it, has already overtaken all the amount of money that ever was lobbied for tobacco.
Wow.
And even if it hasn't overtaken, it's very close. And I think that's always quite a telling, as you say, what you've got to do is drive behaviour change and show people that there's a different way.
Yep.
Because sometimes that's the quickest way to make change, is to have communities of people.
Indeed. And that's
use
a really
their feet to vote.
That's a really good point about the smoking thing. I mean, this is kind of, plastic is kind of the, I hope I don't get shot one day, but plastic is kind of the new smoking. It is. And you know, how many articles have you read about plastic being in every single component of the human body, the born or unborn, and our brains and everything else? I mean, that's can't be good. That can't be good, can it? There's going to one day eventually be the ultimate, you know, health thing about it being doing something bad to your body and also the wider environment and animals and animals that we eat and whether it's in our food supply and anything else. So it's coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like smoking. I think it's a good analogy.
I think, and there's been some
metaphor, I should say.
Yeah, there's been some fantastic work done on it. But I agree with you. I think it around health, around culture, around efficiency, all of these things, I think there'll be people are waking up to sort of what plastic looks like. But there was a fantastic thing, Ocean Race, a little while ago, where there was a boat called Turn the Tide on Plastic, and they tested the water at Point Nemo. Okay. And Point Nemo is the point in the ocean that is the furthest away from land in its entirety. And sort of the running commentary is that it's the closest people to Point Nemo are on the International Space Station.
Yeah.
And they tested the water there, and it had microplastics in. So it's in our bodies, it's in our oceans, it's in all of the systems. And that is something that has going to have to be dealt with. Yeah. But it doesn't mean you have to continue putting it there.
Yeah, exactly right. That's it. It's so hard to get it out of the oceans at the other end. There's some admirable things happening around that. But let's just stop putting it in there in the first space.
You know, arguably the issue around single-use plastic, as you say, there are things that are happening at the end of the supply chain and trying to take plastics out of the ocean and etc. When you looked at the problem, why is it that you landed on this kind of solution of this ultra-purified refill dispensers, reusable bottles at the consumer? Was there something that sort of was a moment where it clicked that that's where it was going to be?
Good. So, and I must rewind also and say, this I'm not done. Our team is, there's four co-founders, and we all met at various times from 2016 when it started out to 2018. So Ian, Laura, David are my co-founders, and we've all got sort of passionate ideas around this, and we were shooting around thoughts once we came up with the name, which was obviously a name around, it's time to go Ape2O, it's time to go Ape, get passionate, do something about plastic and about single-use plastic. We basically thought, look, the two insights we had were, one, and I've mentioned this before, the water on the go market is the market to really go for, because that's where people are paying way too much for water, and it's a third of the bottles that are created that are going in the one on the go sector. And the second part was, we're really converting bottled water drinkers. That is our challenge. How do we convert bottled water drinkers, not tap water drinkers? So that's a mindset change, because then you go back to, what are the perceived benefits that those people are getting from bottled water? So we've talked about that. So convenience, taste, purity, trust, hygiene. So then we thought, how do we mimic those benefits in a public water solution? So I thought, right, well, people are starting to carry bottles around more, but it's a very, very competitive sector. So I don't know, last figures I saw, that it was like $60 billion market worldwide and growing rapidly with, you know, all the brands that you will know. And it's a lifestyle choice in itself. But that's a very difficult place to compete in. And we thought, but no one's really addressing the actual provision of the water in the public place that people can refill with all those cool bottles which they spend a lot of money on. So how do let so why is no one doing that? The answer is it's hard. It's really hard. But also secondly, it's the it, we knew it's, it had to be done. It's got to be done. Someone's got to try. It doesn't mean because it hasn't been done, it can't be done. And so we focused on making a finding a machine and working with the suppliers that, and we, well, first one was okay. It just didn't do as enough tech that the other ones did. But we've now got a great solution that does incredible, great tech for making the water that goes in come out as H2O and water that's better quality, arguably, than the bottled water that people are paying twice the price of petrol for. So that was, that was the focus. Have a place where people can go. That means you've got to have them densely located, so they are convenient. So you've actually got to, in order to be the convenience things, you've got to be densely located. And you know, I'm always reminded of the early days, Kevin Costner, Field of Dreams. You know, if you build it, they will come. We know we have to build it. It's going to take a long time, but that is a challenge. So make it densely available. And then the bottle thing is an add-on. And people, you know, we've got a bottle we created. It's 100% plastic free. We couldn't find one that had no plastic. There were plastic caps and stuff, and it was hard to do, but we love it. It's double walled, has a shoulder strap. We think shoulder straps are cool.
The shoulder strap is cool. I let out an audible, ooh, but I...
So, you know, just trying to make it, we just realized, look, and this goes back to that attraction thing rather than shaming thing. You've got to make cool stuff that people want to wear and use and have, and then make our machines look really engaging. And don't, like, we're not advertising our machines. It's just like the message. It's just anti-plastic. And, you know, if you want to use our machines, you will get a good experience of getting quality water.
You did say how tough it is. And I think, you know, any startup or any change of behaviour is difficult to bring to market. But what do you think was the toughest nut for you to crack? Was it the tech? Was it the supply chain? Was it changing the why change what works narrative? Is it raising capital to get people to the investors to believe in your idea? Where did the sort of the real struggle sit? Or was it the classic, it was all of them in different measures at different times?
Of course, Alex, it was all of them, because you know what running a startup's
sometimes
like.
On the same day.
The roller coaster of startup life. I would say for us, because of the nature of what we do, which is quite capital intensive and isn't a tech startup in the fintech space with software and open-ended things, we have to build a network one machine by one machine by one machine. So it's capital. It was hard. It was finding the money. We bootstrapped at the beginning. I mentioned our four co-founders. We've all put money in. We've all put lots of money in. And in the early days, and that's what we needed to do to get to an MVP or a minimum viable product and launch. And so, yeah, it was capital, and it will continue to be capital. It's tough, but we feel like we're on this mission. It's just, as I said, the Kevin Costner thing. If we build it, they will come. So, that was the biggest challenge, I would say.
Yeah, I think investment is one of those really funny things. And we've had sort of similar conversations because we're not necessarily, we don't fit into climate tech because we look at social, economic diversity and environment. And because we weren't a carbon platform when we first launched, although we have one now, it just didn't fit the boundaries. And it's really interesting when you go for an investment, it's not just the idea, it's convincing people that change is possible and getting them to back that. And that is a big ask.
Yep, completely.
Because it's, arguably slightly bigger risk, but also bigger rewards. Yep. Because if you can make it happen, the impact is extraordinary.
And it's good. You get up with a spring in your step each day, right? Because you know you're doing something right. It's just about getting it there, making it happen. So... yeah, it that helps you get having that vision. I'm not talking about I've got a big vision, but just the vision for where we want to take H2O is it does. It gets us up every day in the spring, even for the tough times.
I think that's really relevant. In fact, I actually had slightly tangentially, I had a moment walking over towards, we're in Somerset House at the moment recording.
Very nice. Yeah.
And I was walking over the bridge and it's a slightly grey but very lovely November day, and you've got sort of Houses of Parliament one end, you've got Tower Bridge the other side, and sort of London. I was like, very, very lucky to do the jobs that we do. Yeah. And to have this experience of what work looks like. And I think it's very important as a startup founder.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is. I'm getting
to
out
remind
of
yourself of the luck piece on occasion, because there are plenty of moments where you can struggle to do that, as you say.
see the light.
You were saying earlier about, you know, you give 10% back. Yeah. And again, as a startup, that's pretty bold to go out with that commitment sort of early on. Was that from day one, or is it something you've sort of grown into? And how do you think it's shaped how people see what it is that you do and what the brand stands for?
It was baked in from the start. You know, we formed Ape2O around the why. I mean, the why was, you know, as I said, you know, going back to the turtles, right? It was, God, we got to stop people drinking plastic, you know, encourage people away from plastic bottle use. And so when we started coming up with the product idea, which is, you know, quality water solution, a place to go, a place to refill, a means to refill with our bottles or their own bottles, and then a reason to return. The reason to return thing was really important, right? It was like, so we got to put our money where our mouth is. And 10% of, by the way, I must say, it's 10% of turnover, which is a lot more transparent and scary than net profits. Yeah. Net profits can be whatever it is, and that's a smaller number down there. Turnover is very transparent. We're very open about it. It's published, and you know, we're a small business at the moment, but we've got big ambitions. And I think, do we shout about that and make that specific thing very clear to customers? No, but people that care and want to that find brands and discover brands, and let's be honest, good consumer brands come from having early adopters that fall in love with them and talk about and evangelize on your behalf. And so we just wanted to be true. Everything had to be true. We had to be able to know that there was no smelly fish in the background, and that 10% of our turnover going is a good thing to back yourself on. And it does get us up with a spring in our step. I hope and I look forward to the day when we can fund like complete projects from beginning to end. At the moment, we're not big enough to, you know, for that 10% isn't that big, but it's going to get bigger. And we will never change that. It's part of our DNA. So, and being a 360 degree solution really is really key.
Do you get a chance to go and see any of the projects in action, or have you?
So we actually support, at the moment we do a lot of support with, we work with the ZSL, who were part of the one less bottle partnership. And obviously they run on London Zoo and one of our landowner partners, but they do some incredible marine conservation projects. There's an amazing doctor that works there who I'm a big fan of. And but they, you know, England for Britain has lots of overseas territories, or you know, which have huge exclusion zones around them, and those marine parks. So it's there's a lot of work going into biodiversity and breeding programs and saving certain rare species, and I think that's fantastic. Look, so that's where we started, because it's something we know it's going to those causes. But as we grow, we're with Edinburgh Zoo as well, and is one of our customers, and they support North Sea biodiversity, which is very cool, and that's much closer to home.
Kind of slightly unthought of, yeah. But actually equally as important.
It's important. There's a thing called a flapper skate in the North Sea, which is endangered, and so we're helping to look after that. So I don't know what they wear, the flapper skates. So as time goes on, I really look forward to the day when we can fund entire projects, and whether those will be ones which are very relevant to UK consumers, or just, you know, the bigger, the global piece, because we, you know, ultimately it's one world.
You know, all of the sort of the work that you put into it, was there sort of a moment when you were going through that early stage that you either won a big client or you hit a milestone that you were actually, this works, we've figured on something that we can now scale?
So I mentioned I'd come back to the UK in like 2015, I was passionate about this. I was like, right, we got the bare bones of the idea. So we started, and this is with the team, three of us at that time, and fourth came later. And we started talking to people on the streets. We actually got some bottles from, plastic bottles, perish of thought, but just a small batch, just to do some research on the streets in London. So plastic bottle, which was full of water, saying good water, bad bottle on the label. And then these placards we were holding up, which said, you know, give us 1 minute of your time for a free bottle of water. So everyone likes something for free. So, and we had iPads, and we had just like 9 questions asking people about, hey, you know, they take the bottle and we go, there you go. And then just saying, look, would you like the idea? What do you think about the idea? This is, you know, 6 years ago now, right? What am I talking about? Almost 10 years ago now. Would you like to be able to get refill a bottle on the street. Would you trust that? And would you like it to be chilled? And do you think it would be good to have sparkling water on a street corner? And would you be prepared to pay for it? And what would you be prepared to pay? Those sorts of questions. So look, we did 3 years of research and trying to source machines. We launched in 2019. So to answer your question, the culmination of it, where we thought we'd made it, was landing three big customers in the first year. So that was Southwestern Railway, who I talk about that bold buyer, right? Southwestern Railway, London Zoo, and Landsec. So all, you know, blue chip, top in class sort of companies and charities. And that was amazing, you know. And you know, London Zoo did 10,000 bends in its first quarter, and I was like, "Well, that's it. It's working. This is it. People, this is providing a solution for people that don't like tap water.
But
you do need a bold buyer at the other end of that equation. And I think that really came home to me.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for companies that are willing to step out and try new things.
They need at least half the credit for innovation that works.
I feel like, you know, I should know the answer to this question, but it'd be interesting to sort of for you to explain it. But how do you measure the business impact for Ape2O? And can you give us a sense of some of the metrics that have been super important for you as you've sort of grown the business?
Absolutely. So these going back to our big apes, our sophisticated machines, so they literally measure down to the nearest half liter how much they've dispensed. So we have, and we can access it all remotely through a portal. So we know exactly, I mean, I could tell you, right, you know, well, you know, I can get information very quickly about exactly how many liters we've saved over the years we've been going since 2019. So that metric, obviously there's some well understood, as you would know, for the Future Plus, but also some of the other, you know, Scope 1 to 3 emissions companies about what the conversion rates of a plastic bottle into, say, crude oil or CO2, because, you know, you've got to think about that whole life cycle of that bottle, you know, the virgin material to make it, and the transportation and the filling and the waste reduction and waste handling. And so so that metric is super clear, and we share that on a quarterly basis with each host, with the ones that each host landowner. So, and that's a really important metric for them. So that's number one. And then obviously we're measuring our 10%, and we know what that comes to, and where we're apportioning that. So those are the key things. We're a pretty simple business model, really. We're just providing a sustainable water solution for a fraction of the cost of the polluting alternative.
Have you had moments then that profit and sustainability have pulled in different directions? Or how have you navigated that tension?
Going back to the point I said earlier, we created the business around the why. So the why being the mission. The mission is to rid the world of single use plastic water bottles. We came up with a way of how to do that. And then the 10% is part of that how. So being that 360-degree solution and being the reason to return for a customer to feel good. Really good about that interaction with Ape2O.
So a question sort of follow on that is, what advice would you give to anybody else starting businesses that the values of what they're doing are hugely important? Is there any lessons that you've sort of learned through that process of making sure that your values stay at the top of the pile of decision making?
Yeah, I'd go back to that thing you said about us as startup founders is that, you know, there's dark days on that journey. You know, there's light days and dark days, but you've got to have a vision. You've got to believe in the root of your soul in what you're doing, because you need it. You need that. You need to be able to lean on it, and especially your co-founders and friends or whatever. You need to be able to, you know, there's going to be days when you go, oh, I can't carry on with this. And so to know that you're doing something good, and I don't mean by, you know, being pious or self-indulgent, it's just a human thing. You sometimes, to know that you're on a hard day and things are going difficult, what you're doing is right.
Yeah, I think I may have said it on here before, but one of the best descriptions I've ever heard for being a startup founder is you just find a different ledge every day to lean over, and the greatest skill you've got is to know how far you can lean.
Oh, I like that. I can see that, visualising
it's
that,
a real
right
good
now.
Visualisation, yeah. One of the
results. I made it to this ledge. Oh, I need a slight breather here.
But I think it's such a good way to describe what you do, and sometimes it's thrilling and sometimes it's terrifying. But exactly. There will always be a different ledge.
There's always a different ledge. I like that.
There's a lot of sort of greenwashing I think around in the market, yes, especially around single use water. How have you managed to navigate that, I suppose, with some of your competition? Of is it again sticking just super clear to what you believe in? Have you had to actively sort of I suppose make it clear where you see greenwashing happen, or have you managed to stay out of that space?
That's a good question. So have we sledged at people and said, you know, you shouldn't be saying that? No, we haven't played in that space. What the clear division for us is, there's single use and there's reuse. There's no naming of names, but because it's just the way the industry works at the moment, is the industry's trying to make single use as good as it can be. So that's improving the recyclability, proving that recycling is happening, making the material, not using virgin material, try to use recycled material, trying to make that percentage of that material increase. All of those things are all about improving a single use and propagating and maintaining a single use value chain. Mm-hmm. All we're about is just saying, look, there's another way. But it does involve a bit of consumer participation about having a responsibility to carry something around that you're going to refill. And if you can do that leap, which is a habit change and is a thing and I go back to our point of attracting people towards doing that, then reuse is just a complete order of magnitude different. It's you know, our bottles are a lifetime guarantee, right? So you buy a steel bottle, yes, of course it's got a carbon footprint and an impact for that steel and that transportation in a container, but once you use it, you're going to use it for years, and you know, thousands of refills, and that's the key. I think we've just got to encourage people that refill and reuse is the way. So no, we don't get involved in. There's no point. Well, there is a point, but we just haven't
not
chosen
the place
that,
for you guys.
We don't need to. We're going to just charge forward of making people feel really happy about reuse.
And with that charging forward, if we fast forwarded 10 years, what does success look like for Ape2O? Are you looking expanding outside of water? Is it flavoured waters? Is there something else? What does the future and ambition look like for you guys?
So I go back to those stats, which are probably a little bit out of date for me. So as you said, fact checking, or 6 to 8 billion bottles a year, whatever, £2 billion market, and the millions that are ending up in landfill every day. Look, if Ape2O could make a measurable dent in that number, and that I'm obviously talking specifically UK, but ultimately in other countries as well, it might be a little measure of pride with that as a company pride. But you know, if we can, what we've got to do is set in motion and driven by early adopters and evangelists and people that are driving for change, if we can set in motion that mechanism for making reuse the norm, our job is done. But ultimately, we've got, even if we just stick with what we do, we've got years in front of us of getting these machines into cities all around the UK and making a big dent in that number. But obviously there's some great companies out there doing household product refills, and there's lots of trials going on around that. That's a no-brainer too. But as long as we can all encourage each other promote these ideas, and once they get enough traction, and these are all babies that need to grow to a certain size, and then they can get their own momentum. That's all we're trying to do, is provide a good solution for the public, but we just need public to buy into it and roll with it and support it.
Everything has a starting point.
Indeed.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Zach. It's been hugely interesting to go through it all and to understand more about the journey. If people want to find out more about Future Plus and Ape2O, you can find it in all the usual places, and we'll link it in the notes below on the podcast. And it just leaves me to say a huge thank you for joining us today. It's been an absolutely brilliant conversation. I've massively enjoyed it.
Alex, thank you very much. Me too. I really enjoyed it. Cheers.